hey, listen, kid, our investments pay for our ability to not have to work and play golf all day long. As a 14-year-old, I had no idea that there was this concept of stopping working and essentially enjoying retirement. My job is to help you financially be secure and successful in your life, but also just as important is to enjoy your life along the way, because tomorrow's not guaranteed. My dad passed away at age of 58. It changed the dynamic as to how I showed up for work. I was growing the business and helping clients, and there really wasn't a why behind it.
I found that when a lot of people have a significant loss like that, the biggest outcome is normally they look at life a lot differently.
I have really great confidence that I could walk away for 2 weeks and know that my business is not going to burn up in flames. It's important that business owners really adopt that mentality. And if you feel as though you have to do everything, there is a limit.
Well, everyone, welcome back to Success Rewritten. I'm your host, Emily Lomenzo-Washkovic. And today I have the pleasure of speaking with Xerxes Nabong. Xerxes, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Can you start by giving everyone a little bit of your story, who you are and what brought you to current day?
Yes. So I grew up in Norfolk, Virginia, and then resided in Virginia Beach, Virginia for about 15 years. And then I eventually moved to Scottsdale, Arizona. This is 2020. I've had a couple career paths, but the ultimate role of my day-to-day is being a wealth advisor. I have my own business. The company's called Wealth Avenue. And I'll share a bit about my story to kind of tell you about how I got to where Wealth Avenue is today. And then I'll also sprinkle in some of the side fun jobs that I've had, which really kind of connected us. So me speaking as a financial wealth advisor, I've been in the business since 2005. Although my story goes back to 1997, my dad used to drop me off at Ocean View Golf Course. This is in Norfolk, Virginia. Ocean View Golf Course sounds like a prestigious country club. This was a municipal golf course where a lot of hardworking people would hang out. And in the summer of 97, I was playing golf with guys that were 40, 50, 60 years older than me, many of which are still alive to this day, and which when I do travel back to Virginia, I make it a point to go out and spend some time and play golf with them. And in that summer of 97, I sort of picked up on the idea that while my dad, whose name was Ramses, was off to work every day serving in the U.S. military, the guys I was playing golf with while I was on summer vacation were not getting up and going to work. They were playing golf, drinking beer, smoking their cigars, playing cards in the card room. And I asked him one day, I said, how come you guys don't have jobs? And I sort of said this as a sarcastic 14-year-old, not knowing that there is this idea called retirement. I remember a couple of guys, these guys have since passed, Rami, Satch, Doug. And they said, hey, listen, kid, we have enough money to where work is an option. We saved well, we invested well, and now our investments pay for our ability to not have to work and play golf all day long. And as a 14-year-old, I had no idea that there was this concept of stopping working and essentially enjoying retirement. So fast forward to 2003, I was studying at Old Dominion University. My finance professor, Maureen Steiner, was talking about the time value of money as part of a finance lecture. Take $10,000, add to it each month, earn this rate of return, and this is how you become millionaires or multimillionaires. And I say this respectfully with the older folks that I'm referencing. And I thought to myself at that moment, oh, that's what those old farts did at the golf course. And that's why they were able to retire and enjoy their lives, because they invested well under these circumstances and diligence that Dr. or Professor Steiner was talking about. And at that moment, I decided, in that class, I decided that a career in financial services is something that I'm going to pursue. 2005, I graduated. And just like any college kid, I'm doing keg stands at my graduation party. And 7 days later, I'm sitting for the Series 7 exam to become a financial advisor. So I graduated, I believe it was around the first week of May. And on June 8th, 2005, I showed up to, at the time, what was called American Express Financial Advisors in a shirt and tie, ready to work. Brand new in the business, knew nothing about financial planning other than what I studied in school. Spent about 4.5 years in American Express, which then spun off to Ameriprise Financial, which is what people will know it as today. Spent 4.5 years in Ameriprise Financial and then eventually started my own business. My business partner, who I'm still business partners with today, Phil Malinak, we were two guys in our mid-20s, and we had this really, what we thought was a great concept that if you put your name on the wall behind you, when clients walk in, they see your name on the wall, you feel important. And so we named our company Malinak and Nabong Wealth Advisory Services. And as you could tell, it's a struggle for me to say it, and it's my own business. And if you have any sort of marketing background, you know that is probably the silliest name to consider because it's not something like Smith & Smith, right? It's just, it doesn't roll off your tongue as well. Quickly, I want to say within maybe 10 or 12 months, we adopted the name Virginia Financial Planning, which happened to be our website URL. And we were surprised and pleasantly surprised that Virginia Financial Planning wasn't a name that was taken because it was sort of an easy thing to follow. We do operate under the name Wealth Avenue, which Wealth stands for, obviously, the work that we do, helping people grow, manage, and preserve the wealth. And then Avenue is a term that's used progressing towards something together. So I thought that was a good mix of the work that we do with money and then also Avenue, where we collaborate with our clients and other professionals to help them achieve their goals. Everything was going really well for us. 2010 is when we started our company. We brought 90 client relationships from Ameriprise to our new practice immediately. And so we're really excited. And for the next few years, as I was kind of hitting into my late 20s, we were rocking and rolling is kind of what I would say. I was networking on the golf course, meeting people, getting connected through networking events, client referrals, and we were really growing the business. And there were some exciting times ahead. In 2014, my dad, again, his name is Ramsey, served 30 years in the U.S. military, passed away at age of 58. And while his passing was sort of expected because we saw his health declining, it really was a sudden knee-jerk experience for us to go through. And quite frankly, I haven't lost anyone that was close to me at that time. And even to this day, my mom is still alive and you know, I've had family and even the aunties and uncles that I connect with are still alive. So I never really had that experience of losing someone that was important to me. And what I really gathered from that, from a business standpoint, was it changed the dynamic as to how it is that I showed up for work. Obviously, at that point, I was 9 years in the business. I was growing the business and I'm helping clients. And there really wasn't a why behind it. And what I really decided at a point was that my dad's 58. Today, he'd be 71 this year. And he would be the age that I'm helping many people enjoy and live their life. And for some people that decide to work later on in life, transition into retirement, and he is not around to enjoy that. And so when I talk to people and I bring on new relationships and take on new clients, one of the things I do is I tell them this exact story and I tell them about how life tomorrow isn't guaranteed and in what capacity that we get to experience that. I've seen this happen in so many instances. I've had clients pass away in their 50s and I went to a client's, the wife had done a celebration for her husband who would have turned 60. He died like 12 or 15, 14 months before that. And you just never know what tomorrow is like. So you got to really enjoy your life. Now, as a financial and wealth advisor, that doesn't imply that you should live this YOLO, you only live once, go spend your money and be irresponsible with it. But at the same time, it's important for me to have the discussion as to what's really important to you and whether that's making memories or having fun things or being really successful in your career, whatever that may be, my job is to help you financially be secure and successful in your life, but also just as important is to enjoy your life along the way. Because again, tomorrow is not guaranteed. So that's really the way that we adopt our client relationships is that, yes, the money aspect of it matters, but what's also more important is that they got to live the life. And so there are some exciting things that I get to enjoy in the day-to-day. I have clients that send postcards when they travel. Half my meetings are conversations about vacations and traveling to South Africa and going to Europe and we're showing photos back and forth. And at this point now I have two kids, Ava, who's now two, and my son, Luca, who is now 11 months. And so I'm really starting to kind of see that in full circle just for my own life because I get to experience it beyond myself. And so for Allison, my fiance and me, we get to watch our kids grow up and it's really fun and we work really hard and we're fortunate enough where we have a full-time nanny. But at the same time, like when we leave the office, we want to leave everything at work and we want to make sure that we're enjoying the moment right now. And especially in a world today, like we live off our phones and we're always accessible in many different ways from email. I think back to the days of we had one computer that four of us shared and it wasn't something that we checked email every moment. In the hour that we're going to spend together, Emily, I'm going to probably get 15 or 20 emails. And I want to make, absolutely. And I want to make sure that I'm dedicating when I'm in front of someone or speaking to someone that I'm in the moment. And I do that with my family. I do that with my kids. I do that with my friends and my clients. And so it's living in the moment and not just, it's not just living in the moment financially successful, but also living in the moment and just knowing that you're doing the right thing for the people that are around you that you're impacting. Now, going back a little bit, going back to my career, so I have kids now. And so I started having kids when I was 40. And so in my 30s, I really lived this life of working really hard and playing hard. And because I wasn't in any sort of really committed relationships at the time, I had this ability to be a financial advisor for the day. And then I found this really fun opportunity where I worked for Yelp.com from 2012 to 2018. And I jokingly say my job was to eat, drink, shop, play, throw parties, and I got paid for it. And it allowed me to connect with my community. And I made a lot of friends from that experience, both from the people that I worked with at Yelp and then also within the people that I met within the community. So that was really a fun aspect of my life. And then also in working for Yelp, I was exposed to the idea of the escape room business. One of the fun activities that we did as a team building experience was play an escape room. And being business minded that I am, and then also having the ability to work in community and have some event planning, which all kind of ties into the events that I do today for clients. Doing the escape room helped me kind of like shape my mind with puzzle solving and really thinking outside the box. And so we did this escape room in DC, and I just remember sitting there after we got done, and I just really had a lot of fun. Like, you know, obviously, like if you see like 5 penguins, 3 lions, and 2 sheep on a wall, 532 is a code, right? So you have to think in that kind of way. And I remember my coworker Elsa, she had said to the young lady that was working with us, she goes, "How much does it cost to do this experience?" And she says, $28. And oh, by the way, it's $28 per person. And by the way, we're booked for the next 2.5 months. And so I'm sitting there in the lobby while we're waiting for Uber to go to dinner. And I remember going in our Uber and I was like, that's a really good business idea. And I remember my colleague from Raleigh, Lauren, she goes, "You're going to start one of these businesses, are you?" And I was like, "Yeah, I should." And so for the next several weeks, I had trouble sleeping at night because I was so enthralled with this idea of opening an escape room. And in business, it's sometimes the best business to be in is when you're the first to market. And we did not have an escape room business in the Hampton Roads, Virginia Beach area. So this was February 2012. In April, I was having conversations with a commercial real estate broker and various landlords as to opening a space. June 1st, I got the lease. And on July 15th, we opened our doors. And so a lot of that just kind of goes back to my financial advisor. I have this window of opportunity of time where I don't want to be spending my time at the bars and partying all the time. Like, let me go pick up a job that's going to be fun, that's good for me, that's good for networking, that's good for the community. And oh, by the way, I was exposed to this idea of an escape room and decided to open my own business. That was a very wildly successful business early on. I have since sold the business. I sold it in 2022. We turned a profit, Emily, in 45 days. I want to say in the 7 years that I owned the business, we did over $2 million in revenue. We used to have a map on the wall and we would have people pin where they were coming from. And outside of like the places of like Siberia or maybe North Korea, I would have assumed that most places were pretty accurate. We had pins from all over the United States, in many cases, all over the world. It was just really exciting to see. And being the first to market in the Virginia Beach area just was really great for us. And then a lot of the other escape room, absolutely. A lot of the other escape room owners that were local to us would reach out to me and we would have conversations as to how we could do better in the business. And so that taught me a lot of things from the competition of the market, right, when other escape rooms showed up. Yeah, to me, I always told people, yeah, we're in the escape room business, but we're really in the marketing business. Like, we're competing for people's dollars that they're going to spend on entertainment, whether it's Topgolf or bowling or another escape room. We want to be mindful of that. And so if we do a good job of bringing people in, that's what's going to help us maintain and be successful. And then throughout that entire process, it taught me how to become a better wealth advisor and wealth advisory business owner, because everything in that business is process driven. Give you an example. We have an escape room and a book needs to be at a certain place in order for a customer to see it and solve it. If it's in the wrong place, it's going to change the dynamic of that experience. And if it's in the wrong place 5 different times, 5 customers are going to get different experiences. And in the escape room business, you need to have a consistent process. So that really took me down the path of understanding processes. And yes, it's sometimes the tedious work that us business owners don't want to engage in. And so I hire good people to help me manage that. But everything today is all about a process. If anything ever goes wrong or something doesn't go as planned, we always go back to, was there a breakdown in the process? And it helps us lead better overall.
Yeah, that makes total sense. And thank you so much for giving us the whole journey of just these different stages that you were in, but having that wealth management foundation throughout all of it is so interesting. And I'm sure I was at first thinking about like your time and how you're able to do everything, but I'm remembering you just said being a dad is more recent. So you were having all this extra time for a while running multiple businesses at once. And talk to me a little bit about with the escape room business, when you were running that, I mean, that was like an entire second job on top of what you were already doing. Did it feel really stressful? Did you hire like crew fast? How did you kind of balance the fact that this was sort of like a side gig?
Yes. There's actually one piece of the story that I failed to mention. I had invested in a cafe. So in my dealings in working for Yelp, I came across an individual that had told me about a cafe inside the YMCA and how the business, he was related to the business with the company that he was with, but he saw a big opportunity. And the owners of the cafe or the people that were running the cafe were looking to offload that business operation. And he said, hey, if I just had a couple investors with 25 grand, a few investors with 25 grand each, we could buy this operation. And we just have the ongoing clientele of YMCA members coming in. And that could be a good avenue for us to go bring in some revenue and improve the business. And so I invested in this cafe, and that cafe of that $25,000 investment lost me $80,000. And so while the title of this podcast is Success Rewritten, I could share with you the unsuccess of that business venture that I delved in, but also how I spun that. So kind of going back to your question with the escape room, and did I have somebody doing this? I was taught early on from a business coach, his name is Arnel Tanyag. He always said, do the things that you have to do and then delegate the rest, right? So if you think about the process of like meeting a new prospective client, you meet them, let's just say you meet them at a networking event. You got to shake their hand. You got to do the bit of schmoozing. You got to develop that relationship. And then someone's got to call that person to schedule the meeting and confirm that meeting. And then someone's got to do some prep work for that meeting. And so all these different things that are part of the process of engaging with a new client. And he said, you don't have to do the things like call them to schedule and confirm the appointment and then maybe put together the follow-up conversation. You could have somebody do that for you. Where you're best at is one, meeting them and quote unquote selling them on the idea of having another conversation. And then two, giving the advice along the way. Financial standard regulations require that I give the advice. And so in that whole process, I figured, okay, I'm going to do the things that I have to do in life, and I'm going to delegate the things that I don't have to do, to the point where like I've never mowed a lawn in my life. And I say that proudly, and I might get judged for that, but do I want to spend 2 hours on a Saturday mowing the lawn or on a Tuesday afternoon after work? No, I want to go play golf or at this point, spend time with my family. And so in the process of owning the cafe, I met this young lady, Kristen Stowe. She was working at the cafe. She was hired by the guy that was running the operation. I was supposed to be a silent partner and ended up being throw a lot of money to this, at least some money partner. I remember meeting Kristen and I said, hey, and I used to always ask this question. I'd say, hey, what's your story? And I remember meeting Kristen. I said, hey, Kristen, what's your story? And she just had this big grin. And I know something about the way she smiled at me when I asked that question. I knew from that very moment that I wanted to do something with her, be in business with her. And at the time, we were getting away with paying people $8 an hour because minimum wage was like 7 1/4. So 8 was like a gift if you're just like out of college and you were just kind of finding your next big thing. And I sent Kristen a text one day. I said, hey, I want you to download these escape room games. I want you to play them for a couple of days. And then I want you to call me later and tell me what you think. So a few days later, she calls me and she goes, this was fun. Why'd you have me do this? And I said, I'm opening an escape room business and I want you to run it for me. And she was like, really? And I was like, yeah. And I said, here's how I'm going to do things. And again, I got away with this back. This is 10 years ago. I can't do this today. You know, $8 an hour, she was making on a full-time schedule, $16,000 a year. I said, I'm going to pay you $20,000 a year to run my escape room as a salary. And I don't know when we're going to be profitable because studies show that businesses go 2-3 years without making profit. But once we start making money, I'm going to pay you 20% of the profits. And so when I share with you that I turned a profit in 45 days, it was quick that Kristen started making some money rather quickly. And as a 22-year-old in 2015, 2016, she was making $75,000 a year, which translates into $250,000 worth of profit. And so when people ask me, how do you run a financial planning business and an escape room? It's, I spend 3 hours a month on my escape room. And it's not because I'm going in there talking to customers and running the operation. It's because Kristen's running that operation. And I was having high-level 30,000-foot conversations with her on how to run the business. And she quickly understood I've always been good about kind of tag teaming all my different jobs at the same time. So I would say something like, Kristen, I got a meeting with the Yelp business owner. Why don't you ride along with me? It's about a 30-minute drive. Anything you need to ask me or talk to me about? And she would have a list of documents. Hey, this company wants to consider doing some marketing with us, and we would talk about it. And I'd say, hey, you know what? Go skid your knees on this. Learn if it's actually a good investment. But I want you to think about this, because after we hit this number each month, 20% goes to you. And if you feel as though that you're going to get a return on this money, you're going to benefit from this. And if you don't feel like you're going to get a return on this, like, think about this as your money, not my money, although it is my money, our money.
But highly motivated to make decisions for the future and the growth of the business.
Absolutely. And I will say, this might be premature in the conversation here, but my best business story to date was Kristen ended up getting engaged to Joe. Joe was somebody that worked through the escape room. So they worked together before, and she was like, hey, why don't you just come work with us? And so her and Joe got engaged, and Joe got a teaching job in Fredericksburg, Virginia, which is something like 140, 150 miles away from Virginia Beach. And so she moved.
Oh, wow.
She moved, and she said that in the 2.5 years that she spent working with me running the escape room business, she was confident that she, one, saved enough money from doing pretty well from the business, but she learned so much and enough that she was going to open her own escape room business.
Oh, that's amazing.
Thank you. Yeah, for me, for someone 25 or 26 years old, to be able to go out and start her own business, and just the short experience that she had in working with me, was just, that to me, to this date, has been one of the most exciting things I've had in business.
It's awesome. Well, and I think something that's so like fulfilling and rewarding about that is, it is the confidence, right? I mean, running and owning a business, being an entrepreneur, it takes total guts. And so you gave her the learnings. And also, it sounds like you both were very structure and process driven. And when that's how you function in a business, the idea of opening one isn't as scary, because you kind of have this to-do list, right? Like, I know these are the things we need to do to get open or to run every day. And when I was doing Behind the Review, and, you know, we were always talking about like business lessons and learnings, process driven businesses always were either doing the best or able to make pivots when they weren't doing well, because they could identify like where some of the holdups or false like areas that they were trying to go into were. But something I want to dig into even more is like this cafe and the YMCA. It obviously did not go so well, but you have Kristen as like a result of it, and this other business does very well. But how did you navigate through the loss and still want to invest and do a different business? I think for some people, when they're in that area of like they got burned or things didn't work out the way they thought, they're like not willing or wanting to do that again. Do you remember in that period, like, I'm sure you were pissed at certain points, but what was that like to kind of work through it not working, but then know you still want to do entrepreneurial things?
Yeah, in the end, the investing in the cafe, I won, despite it was I say, looking back, you know, $80,000 is certainly a significant amount of money, especially in 2015, 16. That was certainly painful at the time. You know, less of it today, of course, but nobody wants to go out and lose money. But to me, I kind of chalk it up as a cost of doing business to get to the next level. And sometimes you learn from, you certainly learn from your mistakes. Someone said, you're smart if you learn from your own mistakes, but you have wisdom if you learn from someone else's mistakes. And that someone else was me in a different light. And it just made me realize that a couple things I realized that people pay the most money to hear you speak or what's between your ears. And this is why, as a financial advisor, and I do well in my career, where people are paying me for my advice and my expertise. You know, in the cafe business, you have to worry about cost of goods and payroll and manpower and foot traffic. You know, the escape room business, to some extent, the same way too. And I think I just navigated it well. And I didn't harp on the idea that I lost money and that, you know, because I lost money, I need to get out of the business. It was, and those are also simultaneous position. So it was like I had one business that was thriving. My financial planning business was thriving. And I had this, like, hard if I say this, but this shitty investment that I made that I was like, oh man, at some point I got to exit out of it and just know that, you know, you got to cut your losses. And so I look back and I go, hey, you know, could I have hired someone else to run the escape room? Sure. But, you know, Kristen was definitely the one that I needed to do so. And could I have done it myself? Absolutely. that means I got to deal with.
But it wouldn't have been. I mean, not only would that not have probably been the same because Kristen was so invested, but also your wealth management business would have had to take like a decrease in your time. So there's no, I mean, I think it's incredible that you were able to grow and develop this other person, have an amazing business. It sounds like you were ultimately able to sell it too. But for me, as someone that has kind of been forced into entrepreneurship, like my now husband, but we were together 9 years before we got married. He's always been an entrepreneur and I've like loved helping him and I get such a like, you know, high out of it, but I loved my steady job. And now that I've kind of been pushed into it, there's this element of like, it really is a different day-to-day mindset. And for me, just the thought of a business with overhead, I'm like, yeah, I got to avoid that. But you were so like excited and drawn to that kind of a business, even though I'm sure you knew like it's much higher financial risk than even wealth management, right? I mean, that's a lot of like hypothetical offerings that don't cost you anything until you have a client.
And then I always think of things in highest and best use of time. So I think about, okay, at the time I was able to do the Yelp job for 6 years because after 5 p.m. on most days, I didn't have much going on. So that's sort of when I did my Yelp job and I sprinkled a little bit of things here and there during the day. And I was able to do that from a time management standpoint. My escape room business, it didn't make sense for me to be the general manager of the operation. It made sense to hire Kristen to do that. And so that I could spend 3 hours offline off my, we'll call it my day job where I'm coaching her along the way. And I say that as if like I was never invested in the business. Like, yes, the first from June 1st to July 15th, I was sort of in there every day, some nights, some weekends, some late nights where like I did the website. And then I said, you know what? I got the website. It looks like I learned enough about the code behind it to make it look right. Right. And then I said, let me hire someone else to do that. Kristen and I remember we sat down at a coffee shop, ironically speaking, in Virginia Beach. And I pulled out a business card and I wrote on the back of it. And I said, hey, this is what I think our business card or our logo should look like. And she goes, great. And I said, okay, I'm going to call my buddy VC and he's going to design this on a professional level for us. And so those are like just different things that I contributed early on. But when it came to the operational side of the business, the marketing of things, like I spent a little bit on the marketing side of it. I largely put the responsibility on Kristen because one, I need to trust her in doing so. I think many business owners to this every day that one, they want to reinvent the wheel. They want to do things their own way, right? Everyone thinks they got this great ideas how they do things and largely no business experience. And they want to do everything themselves. And that's where it falls. It's always about, in most cases, making sure that you hire the right people in place. I'm going to butcher this quote, but I think Steve Jobs said something along the lines of, I hire you so you can tell me what needs to get done, not because I want you to do everything that I tell you to do. Otherwise, like, I'll just do it myself.
Right. Right. And there's this element of like, as an entrepreneur, the more you get into it, you realize your time is one of your biggest assets and figuring out how to spend it, not only like efficiently, but also in a way that aligns with your values is really important. And you were saying something earlier when you were talking about working with your clients and the balance of what's important to them. And I think for so many people, as time goes on, whether maybe they start a family or other things happen, they realize that maybe there's a threshold of like, I was working a ton, making like so much money versus never saw anyone that I cared about. And then how can you like balance it a little bit? And it's not swinging all the other way, but it's thinking about the time and energy that you are putting in and the time frame that you're going to have to be putting in that amount and that volume. How do you feel like it's shifted for you? I mean, obviously now you have kids. That's changed things pretty significantly. But have you seen that time, money balance change over time for yourself?
Yes. It used to be 12-hour days. So my early days as a financial advisor, it was we worked from 8:30 to 8 p.m. every night. And so the days that we had a thing, if you set 5 appointments on Monday, so think of like the boiler room. We're just, you know, dialing all day long. And so if we set 5 appointments by 5 p.m. on Monday, you get to go home. And so there were days that we would schedule our 5 appointments for the week. We're excited. You know, there's some prospective clients coming in. We're going home at 5 o'clock. And I'm calling my buddies. I'm like, hey, I'm off early today. Let's go grab dinner. And they're like, what do you mean you're off early? Like, this is just a normal day for us. So I got used to this idea of working 60 hours a week. When I started my own practice in 2010, I remember going home at 5:30 because I didn't have to go home. I didn't have to be at the office. And it felt weird. It felt, for the first time in 5 years, I was like, man, I'm actually going to, like, I got like a regular time schedule. And so that shifted a little bit when I took the Yelp job, because I went from this call it 9 to 5 to 5 to 10 at night, you know, still trying to figure out the gym time and working out, still trying to have some social life. And I was able to, the Yelp job itself allowed me to marry the idea of a social life while I was still work, because the job itself wasn't terribly hard at all. It was actually fun. So I didn't really necessarily view it as work, but I look at it differently now. It was a few years ago, I was talking to my sister and she had mentioned this idea that spend 8 hours of your day working, spend 8 hours of your day resting, and then 8 hours of your day socializing. And so there are days I still sometimes put 10 to 12 hour days in. Like yesterday, I had a meeting at 6 a.m. in Arizona, 8 o'clock in Virginia. Now I get home till 10 o'clock last night. That happens, you know, once or twice a month. And I did a client event last night. Again, it wasn't all business. It was very social. I like to get to know people on a personal basis. And so outside of the, I say shirt and tie, this might be the most dressy you'll ever see me. Outside of the shirt and tie that I typically wear on a day-to-day basis, quote unquote, I am a human being that enjoys life and have a family and I have hobbies. And so I like to be able to do things with people that I work with so that they get to know that outside of the financial business aspect of Xerxes and the Bong, there is a human side to Xerxes and the Bong that if you get to understand that side of me, then it might help you realize that makes me a better person in the office.
And I think there's this element of like, you have to navigate it as time goes on. You can't always anticipate what those different important things on your plate are going to be or when they're going to need more time. But I do feel like you had this shift in kind of how you view the world when your dad passed. And I found that when a lot of people have a significant loss like that, I mean, that is like the biggest outcome is normally they look at life a lot differently and in many ways for the positive, but it's so like unfortunate that you have to have this horrible, the worst thing that's probably happened to you happen in order for that perspective to shift. Do you remember in that stage, like, was work helping you get through the loss, or you had this period where you like really paused? What was that life frame like in those months surrounding when you lost your dad?
I had a dream not too long after my dad passed. My dad was sick, and so I actually did not go to the viewing. Like I had a memory of him as a young, healthy. My dad could do muscle pull-ups, and I can't even do them. And my dad was, he wasn't a big guy, 5'3", but he was a strong, like people would say, like, I mean, your dad, he's a strong little guy. And so I had this memory of him early on after he passed of what he was like as a young man, handsome in his 30s. And I wanted that to be imprinted for the rest of my life. And so purposely, it wasn't out of disrespect. It was so that I have this beautiful image of him. Not too long after he passed, I had a dream where we were standing outside of our house and we just like had this really long hug. And I remember telling my sister, like, I had a dream last night. Dad and I were crying and we were smiling and we were hugging. And she said, you know, that's a beautiful memory. And so that to me helped me get closure with his passing, to know that he's watching over me and my family and that everything's going to be okay.
Yeah. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, a little emotional. God, yes.
I know. And I have to tell you, I do think it's a good interview when someone gets me to cry. So that means you're doing a good job. But I, you know, you said it yourself that even since you haven't had a significant loss like that. And I do think that's the difference between like, you know, losing a grandparent at 85 and losing, you know, a parent in their late 50s. It's way different. And, you know, not to like compare losses or anything, but I do think it really kind of shakes up how you look at the world and you look at things. And you were already kind of having that experience with your dad's relationship to work and kind of what you were learning at this golf course. So I feel like it kind of came full circle for you when that was how the end of his life came to be, was, you know, it almost, in my opinion, it's like a double on him not getting to enjoy, you know, it was like he was working so hard his whole life. And then also didn't get to enjoy a bunch of retirement. Now that you have kids, I feel like the time with them right now is just as important as the ability to afford a life that you want for them. How do you kind of navigate that? Because it's been a while now that you've kind of been doing this whole parent thing in addition to your entrepreneurship.
Yes, it's my oldest, Ava's two. Luca's going to be a year next month. And we think about this in the context of you're going to have 13 Halloweens. And because I've had kids later in life, it's not that late, but later for me. And I have friends that have kids that are 10, 15. Gosh, some are adults now. Talking about it has been helpful. Like my buddy Lyle, he says, you know, you're about to have a kid. Just, and he kind of points out his daughter and she's kind of doing the TikTok dance. And he says, hey, you know, they're going to eventually do that one day. They're going to want to do their own thing. So, and love it while they're young. Do all the things that you can. And so we think about that again, going back to the idea that there's going to be 13 Halloweens and 13 Easters, call it whatever holiday you want to do. And then at some point they're going to grow up. And they're going to find their own life. And that's an important thing that Alice and I address is that, yes, the kids are important to us, obviously, but we got to be number one for each other because it gets stressful, right? Kids get up in the middle of the night. Sometimes I sleep through it. Sometimes she sleeps through it. Sometimes we're both up, each with a kid, looking at each other going, why the hell did we do this? And like, this is fun, but we won't change it for the world type conversations. But we just try to embrace every moment because it goes by fast. It truly does.
Well, and I think that's such a good way to look at it when you're thinking of these milestones, right? That are going to be huge in their lives, but also are fleeting in a way. And I mean, I think of my own growing up and those are definitely the memories that are there. It's the trips, right? It's the holidays. And it's also the fact that my parents prioritized us having dinner together, you know, and that time that we really felt like we had their attention and it was way different, right? I mean, there weren't cell phones competing with our, you know, time at dinner, you know, but I do feel like some of the most successful people are very intentional about that. And that's because they want to be able to give that time when they're at work and then give the time at home. Do you find yourself having to like do anything to make sure you keep up on that? Do you have like boundaries that you try to stay within in terms of your working or certain hours that are dedicated, like always to family? Any advice for how you kind of manage and stay on top of it over time?
A couple things. So occasionally I'll pull out the laptop late at night just because I could watch TV and kind of have it in the background and kind of feel like I'm getting my, what do they call that? The death scroll, right? Or like the hey, I want to watch this TV show, but I don't have to pay attention to every moment of it. But you know, I could get a couple things done to kind of help me get ready for the next day. I don't mind doing that from time to time, but I definitely don't do it when the kids are around. I don't do any phone calls once I go home. And this large, I put my phone away. And there are days that I won't look at my phone until I go to bed and make sure my alarm is set for the next day.
So good for the mind.
Yes.
Like, and I think, I don't know if you've experienced this, but I'm sure in the beginning when you would put it away, you'd be wondering, like, did something come through? But over time, you build that confidence, like, it's fine. I'll look at it again before bed and nothing like crazy is going to happen between now and then, or I'll know about it, but I don't need to have it with me all the time.
Weekends, I don't do any phone calls or meetings just because it's family time. Now, when I do travel to Virginia, I'm going to Virginia next week and I'm going to drive to Richmond to go see a client's new home. It's just one of those things where it's like, hey, this is an important part of your life that I've been helping you through. And sure, I want to see this place because I probably won't see you as often as I would see you if you were in Virginia. So I'll do those things because it's the right thing. It's the best thing. It also means a lot to me as well. So I certainly ensure that whenever I am not working, that I'm focused on what's in front of me. And if there is nothing else that I need to focus on, like if I'm just going to waste my time watching TV, then I might as well, I'll check an email here or there. I'll read about the markets to kind of just frame my mind for the next day because I do enjoy that aspect of it.
Yeah. It sounds like you prioritize working out as well. Is that something that you have to like carve time out for, but really prioritize?
I do. Yeah. So sometimes I do the two-a-days. I'll do Orange Theory in the afternoon for my cardio. And then I will go lift weights. And sometimes, you know, I'll do one or the other, but many times I'll do both. The nice thing about living in Arizona is, and essentially working for the most part East Coast hours, is that day starts around 7 a.m. It's soon to be 6 a.m. because of the time zone difference. And generally speaking, I'm done at 1 or 2 o'clock. Now, I have clients on the West Coast that I will see. And so it's not every day that I'm in the office till 5 o'clock. And so I will put in a good 8 hours a day, just about every day. But then I know that between the hours of, say, 2 and 6 o'clock, I have the ability to go work out and run errands and do things that most people kind of have to take time off to do.
Yeah.
I'm the type of person where I don't like to take days off just for taking days off. Like, I'm not, if I'm going to go on vacation with family, I'll unplug. But to just take a random Tuesday off, it's not really in my MO.
And I think there's something about owning your schedule or having it work for you that makes you operate that way. You know, like, you're able to fill your cup throughout the day because the hours align better with how you need to handle clients. And then you're able to get that time back in the afternoon, whether it's doing things for the family or home or working out. And sometimes I tell people, like, where are you not taking more control over your schedule that you actually could? Because I think sometimes we do things with our schedule that are like external factors pressing on us, like the hours we should be working or different things like that. And sometimes it's good. Maybe there are real external factors or pressures that create those systems in your schedule. But if you can leave sometimes at 3 o'clock and go do a workout, and that's going to like make you feel so good, that's worth it, in my opinion, to take that like autonomy over your schedule is kind of how I think of it.
And with an 11-month-old that gets up a few times in the evening, sometimes a 20-minute power nap is all I need to just rejuvenate me to get to the rest of the day. I'm not afraid to take those, that's for sure. Not during the market hours, but after the market closes, I have shifted.
But naps get a bad rap. They really do. And they're like actually physically good for you if you're doing them the right way.
Every client, I will joke with clients. Yeah, sometimes I put these couches together, these couches behind me. Sometimes I put these couches together and I doze off for 20 minutes and that's all I need. And because I'm the type of person, we just did a, what, that DISC personality.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a high D. I work better when I'm by myself. I could have some outside general noise. So like going to a cafe and hearing noise is okay. But if you're talking directly to me, it's distracting. And so because I operate in this office by myself and my team's in Virginia, it allows me to really be effective.
Yeah. Okay. Since you brought up one of those personality types, how do you just in general feel knowing yourself or like what you're motivated by? How does that help you navigate through the day? Because I feel like you have this very natural hierarchy in your mind of what's important, and that helps you structure. But there's so many people I feel like who are still trying to figure that out. Do you have any advice for how you do that?
I like to write things down. So I got this book that I bought. I call it my diary, and I write everything from meetings with clients and business brought in to my to-do list. One of the things I like about this particular book is I think they only have like 6 slots for to-do. And I found that if I have more than 6 items on my to-do list, I find myself struggling to find the priority to get things done. And so I'll write in there, like, here's are the things that I know I absolutely have to get done. And if I get these things done and the day is over and I need to go home, whether I got a gym class I need to attend or I'm going to go meet a client, or it's just time to just go home and just unplug, I know that I'm successful in that regard because I've prioritized my day with the things that have to get addressed.
You're the second person now that's kind of given that advice in terms of if you have those more manageable quantity of items on your to-do list, not only do you feel accomplished checking them off, but it does allow you to have that like recharge because you know you achieved what you needed to do. And it also sometimes like gets you going and you can do more, but you don't want to overwhelm the task load because then it's almost like you're feeling like you didn't do enough when that's not really true.
There's always something to do.
I know.
No matter what. I thought about this when I had my Yelp job and that I was overseeing Kristen the escape room and then also running a wealth business. And I just knew like, here's a 4 or 5 things I need to do for each one of these. Escape room 1 or 2, but for everything else, these are the things I'm going to do. And so I make it a point that when I'm in the office, I'm busy and I'm working and I'm using my time in the most effective manner. I talk to a lot of fellow financial advisors, and because I've expanded, so I talk about the business from 2010 with Phil and me and Malinak Nabong, call it Wealth Avenue, call it Virginia Financial Planning. It was just us. And then we hired an assistant, and now we're 11 people. And so one of the things that I prioritize on my to-do list on a daily basis is helping the three advisors that are not partners of Wealth Avenue grow their business. Sort of the same way that I saw success with Kristen and her ability to open her own business. I, as a business owner, have a responsibility to ensure that the success of everyone that works with me is there. And that's not just my staff, but it's also these advisors. And so I place an emphasis on ensuring that the things that I do are demonstrated activities that are going to be successful that they could follow along.
Yeah.
That's helped me that's helped me from a leadership perspective.
Totally. Well, I feel like that's the perfect tee up for you to tell everyone where they can learn more about the business, where they can follow you, or maybe even explore if they want to work with you or your firm.
Yes, absolutely. My business website is wealthavenue.us. Avenue is spelled out. I'm on LinkedIn, Xerxes Nabong. If you like to follow me socially, Xerxes Nabong is also my Instagram handle. And then you could also follow me on Facebook. I will say that what you will find on my Instagram feed is mostly my kids.
I love it though. I think it's so true that in your industry and in almost any industry, people want to know who they're interacting with and working with. And your family is important to you. And I think it's great that you're able to share that and people are able to see how that is a priority amongst all of the things that you have on your plate.
Interesting that you say that. I attended a networking event in Scottsdale, I think 2021. This is 5 years ago, which is interesting to say. And I recall showing up like I've always done with a pocket of business cards in my fancy business card holder. And what I noticed, people were asking each other, they weren't asking for business cards. They were saying, hey, what's your Instagram handle? And it made me realize that people do business with who they like. Think about this. You could throw a rock and hit a financial advisor, wealth advisor, right? Someone that helps you with investments or insurance. Everyone knows someone. Everyone's got a guy, they got a gal. And what I tell people, it's like, you're going to get the same advice no matter where you go. Now, some advice can be better than others. And obviously some people have greater expertise than others in areas that versus others that may talk to. But in the end, you're going to do business with people you like. And it's not to say that I quote unquote, sell myself or position myself in a way that people like me, I'm just going to be me. And if you like me for who I am, also you like the way that I deliver content and advice and explain complex financial planning concepts that are easy for you to follow and understand, then that should be a consideration in which we should do business together. So my
absolutely.
As I say, if you like the interview and you think that maybe there's a synergy in which we could have a really good dialogue and conversations and those conversations could lead you to becoming better successful financially, then that'd be grounds for us to have a conversation.
Yeah. And I mean, I just think in general, it's good for people to know and follow and pay attention to people who are experts in these different areas. And I think you do an amazing job of bringing knowledge and education to your online presence. So if people are even just like wanting to dip their toes in or see, you know, more about the industry and your expertise, they can find a bunch on your website and on social media. But I also think that's good if they're trying to figure out a way to do that for themselves or their own brand, because so many people struggle with that. Like, how do I show up as a representative or reflection of my business? And, you know, questions about if they should mix the two. So I'm really glad that we kind of touched on the value of bringing the family in, but also, yeah, people like working with people that they know and like and trust. And you have to be yourself in order to gain that. You can't be someone else or, you know, it won't really work on a genuine foundation, which is what's going to make it last.
One of the things I love doing is working with business owners. One, because I am one.
Right.
And two, because people get caught up in their business, whether it boils down to time management or wanting to do everything because they want to have control. The biggest thing that I often will coach fellow financial advisor or other business owners is understanding that you can't do it all. Because if you're the entire business and you're gone for a day or a week, like I have really, really great confidence that I could walk away for 10 days or a week or 2 weeks and know that my business is not going to burn up in flames.
And that's powerful.
And then it's exciting. And it's important that I think for business owners to really adopt that mentality. And if you feel as though you have to do everything, then I'm not saying you're going to fail, but the limitation is there is a limit.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And someone once said to me, if you have to do everything for your business to run, you know, you're like an independent consultant. And I really think that that's a good way to think of the growth of your business is when are you at a stage where giving certain tasks or processes or items to people will allow the business to grow because it's not being held back by your own capacity of the number of hours in a day, right? Is there anything else that you wanted to share or thought I'd tee you up for? I feel like you brought so much value, but if there's any closing advice or parting wisdom that you wanted to give, please feel free.
Yeah, parting wisdom. Never be the smartest person in the room. Always be in a place where you can learn from others.
That's great advice. And I think so many people forget that even as you go through your career and maybe you're becoming more knowledgeable or skilled in certain areas, it's always good to surround yourself with people that are better in other areas or even the same so that you continue to grow and learn. So,
and be open about it and be open about the successes and struggles because you never know. Sometimes people are going through the same thing. And just by talking it out, you might be able to figure out your own issues. We oftentimes get in our own way.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to join us. I really appreciate how honest you got about the different stages in your journey. And I know it's going to help a lot of people who are kind of questioning what that balance looks like for them when it comes to time, money, and all the other factors that we weigh on a daily basis.
Well, thank you for having me.
All right. We'll see you next time, everyone.